Peter Twist here with another radio show for this week.
And I'm joined now by Dan Schaefer. Just to give a bit of advice or an insight into somebody who's a bit younger than both of us, we've got to the stage now where the internet has come along, and I personally find it really advantageous to try and design my lifestyle to kind of calm down a bit more and get a balance. What advice would you give to younger people who are...
Well, I hate to sound trite and cliched, but I would say you need to stop and smell the roses. You need to stop and think about, where's your life headed? Where do you want to be in 5 years or 10 years or 30 years? I know those are long horizons to think about when you're younger, but I think that the particularly in the United States, but I think around the world, the events of September 11th have coalesced a lot of people into rethinking their values and what's important to them. And one of the things I think is very interesting about the people who have been very successful with online internet marketing experiences is that they uniformly report the ability, if you wish to do so, to live a very sort of slow-paced lifestyle. I mean, I don't know any of these guys that in the business, in the online marketing business, that I would say, having achieved success, are killing themselves. They're working relatively few hours. There's a relatively automatic process of generating cash out of what they're doing. There are some procedures and steps that you can go through, and you can find out what those are by, you know, joining groups, going to conferences, reading newsletters, and so forth. Regularized, pretty predictable set of procedures and processes you can go through to get your products online and get people buying them. And you don't need to kill yourself after that, unless you, of course, want to keep adding more money into your coffers. And I'm gratified to see that most of the folks that have become successful in the internet marketing space seem, at least, to reach a point where they are content with what they're doing. They're not satisfied in terms of wanting to stay there, but they're at least content enough that they're not always scrambling and racing, trying to find the next big thing.
Yeah.
They're content to sell what they've got, improve it, build relationships with their customers, and enjoy their lives.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's going to sound like a bit like group therapy, me saying what I'm going to say, but I've always found that. I've always had a certain attitude myself, and especially in the media business where I am, everybody's fairly competitive and not very helpful. And I'm so pleased that I finally found a group of people like yourself and the other guys who are, first of all, very open, very friendly, and fairly laid back as well. It's really reassuring. I always thought I was lazy, but I don't think I am now.
No, Peter, I think laziness isn't the issue. The issue is balance. The issue is focus. You know, if there's an old saying that nobody on their deathbed ever says, gee, I wish I'd spend more time at the office. And it's really an encapsulation of an important truth. A recipe for success, something you won't necessarily find in the literature where you learn the processes and the steps, is to have your mind prepared for success and for learning the kinds of things that I was talking about a minute ago. It doesn't do any good for your ship to come in if you're waiting at the airport. There's an old saying that if you don't know where you're going, any path will take you there. So to me, one of the really important aspects of being successful in life, I define success in life as simply being able to do what I love and work only with people I like, because nothing else turns out to be in the long run very important or interesting. In order to do that, you have to have a mindset that's prepared to filter the information coming into you, see the truth of it, see the falsity of it, filter it out, and focus on the things that are useful. To do that, I think you need to read. You know, you need to read well and to read widely, and you need to read in the literature, not just of your business, but of sort of life success in general. So when people say to me, well, gee, you know, what kinds of books should I read? I have sort of a number of titles that I recommend to people, which I'd be happy to share with you if you'd like.
Yeah, because I was just going to add that, I mean, perhaps it's just me who's been a gullible and naive person in my life, but when I look back at how many people probably tried to control me and get me to do what they wanted, and especially if you're a person who wants to please other people, it's very easy to fall into that trap, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
That's Dan Schaefer, the voice of wisdom. And as I mentioned last week, Dan is a ghostwriter. So if you're having trouble writing that book you've always wanted to do, well, get in touch with Dan. I think he says get it out of your brain and into your wallet. That's the best way to do it. Well, now we move on to our special guest, and it's a great honour, actually, to welcome Rick Benito onto the show today. Rick started, I think, on the internet in about 1996, and actually started marketing in around 1998, and he's famous for his e-zine marketing machine program, and also his Ideat plates. And a book that I really enjoyed of Rick's is called Branding You. Well, he's changed direction a little bit these days, and he's put together a book called Success, A Spiritual Matter. Now, Rick is on the line now, so hello there, Rick. And first of all, what inspired you to write this book?
Well, short answer, Peter, it was what happened on September 11th, 2001. That event impacted me so heavily as to basically shut me down for many, many months. I was really severely traumatized by what happened, and it made me do some intense soul searching, and the process took really until the beginning of this year. And I ultimately decided to change directions completely with respect to what I was doing online, change my direction from helping people build their business to just pure and simple helping to build people. Actually, I made two decisions January this year, and one was to create the resource now known as PeopleBuildingPeople.com, and the other was to create an ebook that shared the wisdom of many successful entrepreneurs, which of course became Success, A Spiritual Matter.
I watched a program on the television last night. I think it was called Through the Wires, and it was looking at how AT&T, the telecoms company in the US, were affected by that particular day. You know, I can understand that obviously lots of people were trying to contact their loved ones, but at the same time, it was an interesting view of how we've become in this technological age where we're all panicking, trying to phone each other. And I would imagine that now many people are just looking for a simpler life in the future. Would that be true, do you think?
Absolutely. I think that people to really start looking inward and get in touch with the things in life that really matter. You know, their family, friends, careers, their belief system, their own personal happiness, and, you know, really all the things we always should have been centered on. And you know what, for an event like that, I mean, there's the universe has it that there's always a positive to every negative that happens. I think the great thing about 9/11 is, you know, the aftermath where people really are getting in touch with their spiritual self. You know, and you know, I think whenever the subject of making money, you know, comes up, it's done in the context of, you know, where that really applies. And you know, making money can be a very, very spiritual process.
Even more so now, the other expression I see a lot in people in the internet business is money is a means of getting time freedom. I think Jim Rohn had an expression in there. It says, yes, you can contact him, but you can't find him for a while. He's gone.
You know, when Jim said that in the interview that Audrey Lanford and I did with him, we both smiled. We talked about it after. And, you know, the time freedom you mentioned and even the making of money that allows for that has always, like I said, been a spiritual thing for me. And if you look at all the great things you can accomplish with the luxury of time in your life, I mean, a lot of people now are volunteering for, you know, charities where they've never done that before. I mean, just that time by itself, I mean, you can, you know, people are now choosing to spend it with their loved ones and build their relationships and you know, even spending more time with, you know, on yourself and doing things that you enjoy.
I think a few of the people interviewed mentioned it, that before you help other people, get yourself sorted out first. That's important.
Yeah, absolutely, Peter. I think one of the biggest reasons why a lot of people, you know, miss the boat to being happy is they don't put themselves...
Because they feel they're being selfish, I suppose.
You know, I think they're taught. I think a lot of us have been taught that treating yourself as number one is not a good thing to do. You know, it should be, you know, things such as God and your children and other things ahead of you. The thing that I believed for a long, long time is that, you know, you can't, you know, help other people unless you're taken care of first.
So you have that strength to help others as well. There's quite a wide age spread within the book. We're not just talking about really young people or even really old people. So the spirituality must affect people of all ages, yeah?
Absolutely. You did pretty well the same thing I did and most people I know. And when I was a teenager, I had some real struggles just searching for my own identity.
Yeah.
You know, like, who am I? Why am I here? You know, what am I going to do with my life? Vietnam and everything going on in the world, and why was there so much hatred and violence? I mean, those are all searches that are within the realm of spirituality. You know, and they use them to be springboards to moving forward, going on to something better and achieving success. Some of the stories are devastating. I mean, I've got my own, and I'm sure you have your own. and it's how you use the lessons that come from that. I mean, that is what determines most of the time the people who, you know, become successful to, you know, to those who flounder.
Yes, it's how you react to things around you, isn't it?
And just what we talked about, you know, setbacks are, you know, are often disguised as doors to greater things. And once you recognize that, life becomes a lot easier, and so does the process of achievement. Mm. And I think also, too, I mean, integrity.
And possibly, I think it was Joe Vitale said that, you know, sometimes just chasing the dollar because it looks attractive, in the long term, that's not always the best thing to do, is it?
No, you know what I believe? I've been very lucky to believe this for a long time. You know, when you focus on money, okay? Mm. I mean, money doesn't usually come to your bank account, you know? It's when you focus on helping other people, you focus on what you love to do, okay, and you don't think about money, that's when your bank account fills up. That has been something that has happened my entire life. I'm going to say something that may be interpreted as a little bit harsh here, but it's something that I, you know, I really believe is true. You know, and especially when there are things such as setbacks, just, I mean, in this economy right now, which I don't like to discuss the negative economy, but, you know, a lot of people are struggling, you know. And, you know, it's during times like that, but even in good times, when you have a lot of negative people, negative influence around you, I mean, that can suck you dry. It could be your spouse, it could be your parents or brothers or sisters or friends or, you know, other business associates, and you know, the energy it takes to dial out the, you know, those dark clouds can be really, really...
Because I would say that one of the biggest battles that we all face initially is ourselves, and, you know, you're trying to convince yourself of what you're doing is bad enough without having somebody nearby saying things as well. Yeah,
and you know what, I've always maintained that this is the harsh part. You're going to be much further ahead by ridding your entire life of as much negativity as you can.
Yeah.
Okay, because we spend such precious little time on this planet, and better not to rot in negativity.
For anybody who's listening at the moment, and, you know, particularly listening to this radio show, and they're interested in marketing and the internet business, and they're getting quite frustrated, is there any one piece of advice that you'd give to anybody starting out in any kind of internet business now?
When people ask me that, you know, my advice goes more to really the spiritual side as opposed to the latest tip or viral secret or, you know, whatever. And strong belief in self is absolutely fundamental. It doesn't matter what you're doing, whether you're doing it online or offline. And I find that missing in, you know, I mean, I get hundreds of emails, as I'm sure you do, you know, what am I doing wrong? And I'm finding it so hard, and what do I do? And, you know, you can just read into these emails that, you know, the person's really struggling in the self-belief department. Having a strong belief in yourself can, you know, conquer that great success killer called fear. Also, it can also be the anchor that, you know, holds you firmly in place when the going gets tough, okay, as well as an anchor that keeps you humble and grounded, you know, when the craziness of success does happen.
Yeah, because, again, a lot of people have said that, you know, it's one thing having success, but if you're not prepared for it, then that can be just as bad as not having success, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, at an extreme, you know, being in the music business, you know, and I've seen people who, on the face of it, have everything, yet they just can't cope with it because they're not ready.
Another thing when you ask about advice, I believe this for a long, long time. It's the mindset of success.
Yeah.
Before it even arrives. And I mean, you know, success has, you know, can have many, many broad definitions, be very, very different for people. But it doesn't matter what your definition of success is, okay? The one thing I've always believed is, you know, that one is successful just in the sincere attempt to become so. You maintain that success mindset at whatever point you are.
But of course, a lot of people don't even realize they're a success, do they? Because the human nature always has a striving for something which is out of reach.
That is totally correct. Some people will deem me to be successful. You know, I look at Donald Trump and I deem that to be successful. And, you know, some people, Mother Teresa was successful. And I mean, it's a really, really wide open, you know, concept and open to you know, a lot of definitions, I guess.
I think just being able to walk around with hair like Donald Trump is a success, really. But
there you go. So, by the way, do I look good?
You look really good.
Yeah, I took a long time to, you know, get ready for this. So.
Oh, well, we guys on radio, we are so handsome, it's unbelievable. We have a good face for radio, or at least I do.
There you go.
Well, just before we go, we've got two more people to talk to, Pamela Haywood and George Tran. Pamela has one of the best-known e-zines on the internet, the Two Cats e-zine. And while we're staying on the subject of success and setbacks, I just wanted to ask Pamela what success meant to her. When you now, looking back, when you consider the word success, what does that mean to you these days, do you think?
I guess it's being able to please myself. that is a luxury, I suppose, for most people. If you have to be beholden to a boss, and I've certainly been there, being able to get up when I like, do within reason the bits of work I enjoy when I want to do them, that makes a heck of a lot of difference to how I view life in general.
And as with a lot of other people I've spoken to on this program, you do actually live in quite a nice climate as well, don't you? So
yes, yeah.
That makes a difference, especially coming from the UK. That must make a lot of difference.
Oh, very much. Yes, it's a lot drier here.
and as I think you mentioned to me, you can kind of hear the birds singing, look at the mountains. That's nice as well.
Yes, and I'm also only probably about 3 miles as the crow flies from the coast.
People viewing you now and looking at you as a successful person, does that mean that you've always known what you wanted to do in life?
Oh, no, definitely not. And I'm convinced I still don't know what I really want to do when I grow up. No, I've always wanted to write. That's the only thing that has been a theme that's gone throughout my life. But beyond that, apart from living on an island where the weather's nice all year and having my cats, no, I haven't got any specific dreams.
We very often only see the end results of people's success, and most people that I've spoken to have had some enormous things to overcome in life. Are there any particular setbacks that you've had that you've managed to overcome?
Yeah, plenty. Life's a learning curve, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it's accepting that is what life is. There's always going to be something else around the corner. So you just get on with it. Think of any problem that you've ever surmounted and how you viewed it 6 months or a year later. It's never got the same importance later on than it had at the time. Mm. So you'll always survive.
Try and kind of,
I've been through all sorts of things that, you know, I've lived. I was diagnosed with breast cancer probably about 5 years ago. I spent 3 days where my life was flashing past me. And it was very, very stressful. I can't put across how stressful that is unless somebody's actually lived through that diagnosis. But it's not the end of the world.
But that must have given you a slightly different view on life, I imagine.
Yeah.
You know, stand back and smell the roses.
Yes, it does. It tends to make you less tolerant. In a way, I see it as a completely positive thing because it's made me focus quite a lot. It's eradicated any tendency for worrying about trivia.
Thanks a lot, Pamela. That's Pamela Haywood, who's based in the Canary Islands, just off the coast of Africa, enjoying that lovely, warm sunshine. And don't forget, you can subscribe to her Two Cats e-zine by clicking on the links below. Well, just before we go, a quick word with George Tran. You may not know George, but you'll certainly have heard of his software. It's One Shopping Cart. Now, George, in fact, retired at the grand old age of 31. Now, anybody looking at George now would think, well, it's all right for you, mate, you're doing well, but George has certainly had his share of setbacks, too.
Oh, I have faced immense setbacks. It's just, I keep asking myself, why is God throwing all these curveballs at me? And it just, it never stops. You know, once you think you're on a cruise ride, something will happen and there's a bump in the road.
So do you believe you obviously have again, the trait of a successful person in that you're able to turn those around? Is there any kind of formula that you, when something comes along? I remember one of the old, a really rich person, whenever something bad was said to him, he just used to burst out laughing. And while he was laughing, he used to think of a way around an answer. I mean, do you have anything yourself that you have to deal with things?
Well, actually, I got an inspiration from Napoleon Hill and his favorite saying whenever a crisis happened was, "This too shall pass." And I keep thinking in mind that every time something bad happens, it happens for a reason. And I'm supposed to learn from it and move on and be better from it. And I guarantee you all the crises that I've experienced in the past, all the bad things that has happened, has always turned around and made me a better person and able to do better things with the system. I'll give you a recent example. The ISP that we were hosting our servers with didn't pay their rent for 5 months. Consequently, I mean, they were near bankruptcy, and we didn't know it, but consequently, they went bankrupt. As a result, we had to move our servers and our equipment and our business. Literally, we could have gone bankrupt with them.
Mm.
Our servers went down. And so we moved our entire operation over to another setup in New Jersey. And and we were down for about 2 hours for that whole move. We literally worked 48 hours straight.
Wow.
To get that move accomplished, because there was a lot of preliminary work that needs to be done. But we moved our entire operation over to New Jersey to a very, very professional outfit, a 24-hour man center. The network is monitored every 2 minutes. So literally, we will never be down.
Mm-hmm.
The lesson learned from that is we were going from a mediocre operation to now a world-class operation up there with Yahoo.com. So the point is, it happened for a reason.
George Tran, who's certainly an inspiration to us all, and Nick Bolton is the creator of MailWasher, and he explains to us now what spam is.
Well, spam is just another name for unsolicited commercial email or junk mail that a lot of people are getting in their email inboxes, or inboxes are getting filled up with a lot of junk that haven't asked for. Yeah, it's like telemarketers that ring at meal times. You know, they're unsolicited, you know, contain a lot of false advertising and false products. Try and get you to buy. So, yeah, no, it's a constant source of nuisance for a lot of people.
Sometimes it's even more annoying because some people have opted in to receive information, but then they forget, don't they? And then they still accuse people of sending them spam.
That's right. There was quite a bit of that going on. And then sometimes those addresses that people opt into, they get their addresses sold on to other organisations without them knowing, and all of a sudden they're getting junk mail from all sorts of other places as well. Wow. Yeah, okay. That's definitely a problem.
Quite a few people have been mentioning this problem, especially people with mailing lists when they've been sending out e-zines and newsletters, that the people on their list have been complaining that they haven't been receiving the emails. And it seems that quite a lot of ISPs are now putting filters onto their servers. Do you think that's good or bad?
I don't like it, really. I mean, one person's junk mail is another person's gold, I guess. And a lot of these filters are automated. I actually just did a mailing out today. Got a few returned ones from some of the ISPs saying the automated filter had determined that it looked too much like junk mail, and really it was an update notice to all my mail washer users. I think they're prone to what are called false positives, whereby a normal email is actually judged as junk mail.
Yeah.
So I think it's always better to let people determine their themselves, or let them retrieve that message at least.
Because it's a form of censorship, really, isn't it? I think that's what people are complaining about.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And I've heard that Hotmail have been doing this recently as well, trying to do junk mail filters, but actually blocking a lot of good mail as well. I don't think it's an ideal way of doing things.
Nick will be telling us more about MailWasher in just a minute. Well, as we mentioned there, some ISPs, internet service providers, have put spam filters. They stop you receiving email which they, not you, consider to be spam. Well, I asked Martin Avis in London of what he thought about that.
Yeah, I think the people who are putting these filters on are giving themselves a big problem in the long term, because I read recently that there's a class action case in the States being brought by businesses against the spam filtering ISPs as a restriction of trade. And I can see the logic in that, really, that, you know, if you think about it, if the post office decided that they weren't going to deliver junk mail anymore, they're just going to trash it, everyone would be up in arms about interfering with the mail. And it strikes me that email is the same, really, or should be seen as the same, and maybe it's time we had some legislation to put these things in writing. But on the other hand, I can see why the spam filters have come about, because spam is getting out of hand. But there are ways of dealing with it that are infinitely better than just blocking everything that happens to trigger one of these filter programs.
Yeah. I mean, I always try to say to people is, you know, whether it's security on your computer or this kind of thing, is you've got to be responsible for yourself in a way.
But then everyone has a different level of tolerance. My level of tolerance is perhaps higher than anybody else's, because I probably get 300 or 400 emails a day, and maybe a quarter of those are spam. And it doesn't bother me particularly, because I just block, delete huge numbers of them.
If more of us spend time filtering it ourselves, then we won't see it as a big problem, and somebody else has to set up filters for us, really. I hope people do take more responsibility.
Well, the alternative is that we end up with rather an Orwellian society where everything's dictated for us, and I would much rather be in control myself. Well, I think the problem and the insidious thing about these filter things that go on behind the scenes is that you don't know that they're happening. I get emails from people who say, I haven't received a zine this week, why not? Have I been taken off your list? And when I check back, I find I've had a bounce from their ISP accusing me of spamming them. you know, not an accusation like a spam cop type accusation, but that you get these bounces that say this, yeah, this has been rejected because it's seen as spam. Those people are really quite upset that someone behind the scenes is deciding that they can't receive something that they've actually opted into. It's quite sad that it's got to the stage, yeah, where ISPs feel the need to do that.
Thanks, Martin, and don't forget to check out Martin's Biz eZine. There's lots of good articles on the site there. He's got a great newsletter and also a free ebook in which 12 doers share their success secrets. Well, now back to Nick Bolton, and he's going to explain to us why he created his program called Mail Washer and how it could help you.
Well, it was actually through my own problems with junk mail. I started getting junk mail. I thought, oh, this is a nuisance. I mean, what's out there to stop junk mail? I didn't really find anything I liked or anything that was really easy to use. I found a couple of programs. I thought, yeah, it's got some nice features. And then I decided, well, I mean, you could put a lot of what's out there into a nice package, make it really, really simple to use, but very, very effective. That was how the idea was born, really.
So just to explain a little bit about Mail Washer, first of all, if I can say from my understanding, it's something which you install on your own computer. You don't actually install it on a server or anything like that, because sometimes people get worried about that. So you just download it and install it on your computer, yeah?
Yeah, that's correct. It's a very simple program, actually, but it's quite sophisticated. Yeah, it's very easy. Just download it, install it on your computer, and you're up and running.
The feature I like about it is that you run Mail Washer before you run any of your other mail programs. So what it does is it kind of scans what's there, and you can delete stuff before you even have to download it, can't you?
You can see what's on your internet service provider's mail server, or what's waiting for you in your email inbox without it actually being downloaded into your computer. So you can see what's on the server and delete it, or bounce it back to the sender so it looks like your address is not valid.
Yeah, I thought that was one of the good points about it, actually, rather than just delete it. They would get a message back saying mail undeliverable, would they?
That's right. So, it looks like your address is not valid. You know you don't exist.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, it's a very successful way of reducing junk mail. So it's actually worked. It's been very good.
Because in theory, what should happen if you bounce it back to them, they should then see that as a bounce and then take your name off their list, hopefully.
That's right.
Yeah.
But also, blacklist, you won't actually get email back to that address anyway.
Right. Tell us about the intuitive side of Mail Washer then. Does it kind of learn your preferences over time?
Yes, it does, to a certain extent. I mean, you can block whole domains or senders anyway, or you can set up your own filters. But it does have inbuilt fuzzy logic to try and judge which messages are junk. And which messages aren't.
I did notice when I read about Mail Washer that you said that you will be bringing out a version that will it work with Hotmail and AOL accounts, I believe.
Yes, that's right. At the end of August, we'll have a Hotmail version out, plus we'll have lots of improvements, and then we'll work on an AOL version because, right. I mean, they're probably the two biggest mail providers in the world, probably the ones with the biggest junk mail problems.
So, again, when Mail Washer checks the server, if an ISP has got filters, would they have already filtered out any email before you can even check it on the server?
Yes, that's correct. I mean, I don't think too many ISPs are doing it. I know some of them are, but they don't really want to block legitimate email.
Thanks for listening. This is Peter Twiss saying I'll see you again next week.